Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I am your host, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak. Greg, I just ate some Kung Pao chicken, so this episode might be a little bit more spicy.
Ooh, where'd you get the Kung Pao chicken from?
A place called Dan Dan.
Here. Dan Dan Noodles?
Yeah.
Chinatown, man. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, I got to say, New York Chinatown food is a lot better, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was watching this Instagram video of this guy going through Chinatown in New York and just like having all of these amazing places. I was like, oh man, I miss New York Chinatown. Like my favorite place. If anybody's in Manhattan that's listening or you're visiting Manhattan, there's a really, really good place called Tasty Hand Pulled Noodles. It is amazing. It is deep in the heart of Chinatown. I guess they actually just opened another place, I think in like the theater district in like Broadway area. I don't know how good that one is, but literally that Chinatown one, you see them in the back with the dough, smacking the dough against the table. And then you actually see them doing like the knife peeled and all that kind of stuff. Oh my God, it's amazing.
That is awesome. And Greg, I think you're right that like just about every single cuisine is probably going to be better in New York than in Philadelphia for the most part. There's going to be a couple exceptions, but like when I take the cost of living in Philadelphia versus New York and divide the higher quality cuisine divided by the cost of living, I think Philadelphia might actually come ahead.
Yeah, Philadelphia is affordable, I got to say. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were ranking for residency, mm-hmm. Philadelphia was so high just because Lauren wanted to get back to a city. I wanted mm-hmm. something affordable. And yeah, it's an affordable city that's easily walkable, great for kids. Go buy a row home in South Philadelphia mm-hmm. like we did or somewhere else. Yeah, it's a very easy place to live as a trainee or as an attendee, but most attendings end up leaving the city once they get that attending money. But yeah, man, so like Philadelphia's not bad. Underrated.
Yeah, and if there is interest on this podcast to learn a little bit more about like budgeting, cost of living, you know, issues that are important for personal finance but aren't directly related to investing in entrepreneurship, definitely let us know. We can do a few deep dives on that as well.
For sure. All right, so in today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about how do you find your first paying customers? How do you find those users that are going to use your product and allow you to scale without hopefully having to take too much venture capital? So this is something that I've learned really from scratch. Like, how do you go out and meet the right people? So we're going to talk about a variety of different tools that I've used in the past. There are a lot of these types of tools. They're all kind of SaaS-based tools, which is software as a service. So anywhere from like, you know, $15 a month to probably the largest one that I've ever spent is probably a couple hundred bucks a month. A lot of these tools, though, are well worth it, especially if you're trying to sell into enterprise, like B2B. It's going to be, these tools are great.
So I've dealt with a number of early stage startups that have overestimated what their distribution is going to look like, right? So there's a company that I've worked with in the past where they were developing a mobile app, you know, for iOS, for Android, things like that. And they were going back and forth on how much they should charge to get the app, right? You know, you have your free apps, you have your some that are, you pay $4.99, $5.99, $9.99, whatever it is. And they were so worried that too many people were going to download the app and log on to their service that it was going to crash their servers and they're going to have to shut down. So they were pushing for, we should charge $20, $30 per person to download the app to get onto our service. I was telling them, no, make it free. That would be a fantastic problem to have if you run out of server space and the app crashes. And they were just like, no, we can't take that risk. And I actually told them, I will put up a little bit of money to buy more server capacity if you guys run into that issue. Let that be on me. So they agreed and they brought down the price to zero. And then they went and, you know, finally released the app on the App Store. And it was great. Like it actually went through and everything. Greg, they got 6 downloads.
Yeah, that's about right.
And this is just like one of those cases of, you know, there's that famous baseball movie, The Field of Dreams, which says, if you build it, they will come. If that happens, you get very lucky. Fantastic. Don't bank on it. Just because you have the best product in the world doesn't mean anybody knows about it. Just because you have a fantastic service doesn't mean anybody's going to use it. So I think today's episode is actually extremely practical, extremely useful to go that next step of not just building a great product and service, but how do you make sure it actually gets into people's hands, people try it, you're able to make a little bit of revenue. Let me hand it back to you, Greg, to just chat about some of these interesting tools that you've come across. But I think that this is just a really important thing for many entrepreneurs to realize that there's more to running a business than just making a great product or service. You have to sell it as well.
Yeah, that also brings up a good point about, like, you know, launching your product, right? So you only get one chance to launch your product. Not true at all, right? So when you launch, likely nobody's going to know that you've launched, even if you shout it from the rooftops, if you have it all over LinkedIn, all over Twitter, all over Facebook, it doesn't matter. Like, nobody cares that you launched your product until you actually create some value. So I remember when we launched FlipMD, I was like, oh yeah, we're going to get, like, you know, 1,000 physicians in this first day. We're going to get 300 clients because, like, why not? The value prop is so high. It's like, no, that's not how real life works, right? Like, you do have to do a fair amount of legwork to actually get any of those results to ever happen. So let's talk about that legwork, right? This is where a lot of the, hey, I need to go out and grind in order to actually build this business comes in. It takes a lot of effort and, you know, a lot of kind of the ability to take no and for people to kind of laugh in your face. And if you have all of that, great. And now I'm going to help you kind of automate some of those tasks. All right. So first big tool that you're going to want to have at your disposal is going to be LinkedIn. So if you don't have a LinkedIn and you're building a company, you're going to want to create a LinkedIn. You're going to want to start, you know, making connections with A, people that you know, but then also people that you want to get in front of. So this is honestly like one of the best channels for, I think, anybody building a company, is using LinkedIn to your advantage. So, you know, go and get what's called a Sales Navigator account. And honestly, I haven't looked at how much Sales Navigator accounts are anymore. I think it's like maybe 150 a month or something like that. And what you can do is use that to actually grow the audience that you're looking for. So once you get the Sales Navigator account, it's going to create this new kind of homepage that you can use in the future. When you go to it, you can actually then search by all of these different criteria. So I use that as kind of my primary sourcing mechanism to find as many of the people that I need to talk to as humanly possible. So if we go back to, or let's just use another example of the, you know, the AI prior authorization technology company, since that's, you know, what we've used in the past, and we'll just keep it consistent. So actually, Rona, sorry, I can hear you like clicking in the background. Are you okay muting and then just coming back on whenever?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good.
And so what you want to do is use Sales Navigator to find the people that you're ultimately going to want to sell to. So this takes a little bit of like strategy, which we won't necessarily go into today, to figure out like what is the right title of the person, what is the right company that you're going to sell into. But let's just take a really simple example of, okay, you're an AI prior authorization company. And let's just say you want to start selling into private practices, small private practices, 1 to 3 physicians. So what you're going to do is try to find those physicians that are private practice owners. So you go into Sales Navigator, you say, you know, I'm going to connect with second and third degree connections because you are already connected to whoever your first degree connections are. And then you're going to type in, you know, they went to medical school, they're a physician and private practice and owner. Great. Now you have a list of, let's say, 3,000 people that are in the US that meet all of those criteria. So now what you have to do is figure out, how do you actually get in front of those people, right? So you now have a list of 3,000 potential customers, which is great. That's exactly what you need. Now you have to figure out, okay, how do I connect with all of them or as many of them as possible? Or now I have this list of first name, last name, where they work. How can I go and figure out what their email address is? So this is all about cold outreach, right? These are people you do not know. So what tools you can use, a couple of them that I can mention. What it is a LinkedIn Sales Navigator automation platform. So what you have the ability to do on Octopus is actually connect with, you can basically build up a list of 10,000 people if you wanted to, and you can go through every day and say, okay, go and connect with 40 of these people on this list. It'll actually do it in the background for you on your computer, so you can go and do other tasks. So if I'm selling something, if I'm trying to build up a startup, I will have a list of like 10,000 people that I ultimately want to connect with. And I'll do that every day. I'll connect with 40 people using Octopus so that I don't have to go and actually connect with them. And you can even leave like a message and say, hey, I'm building this company. Do you want to chat? Whatever. So that's one tool that actually allows you to connect with people. Octopus also allows you to create a message campaign similar to like a CRM. So using like HubSpot or Salesforce or any of these other kind of tools. And you can actually build out a messaging campaign. So of people that you are primarily connected to. So first degree connections. So as those people connect with you, as those private practice owners connect with you, you take them from, you know, their connect campaign on Octopus and you put them into a messaging campaign. So now you actually get to talk to them and say, hey, thanks so much for connecting. I really wanted to reach out about XYZ prior authorization company that I'm building. Here are the value propositions that I can show you right now. Would you like to meet about this? So that is two of the quick kind of LinkedIn tools that you can use. Again, these are super powerful because everybody that you're going to want to talk to is going to be on LinkedIn, most likely. Most professionals are on LinkedIn. A lot of physicians are on LinkedIn. And it's just an easy tool to use to kind of create this cold outreach, which ultimately can help drive your business. I mean, Ronak, any questions about kind of using LinkedIn to your advantage? And this isn't even talking about like, you know, creating content and putting it out on LinkedIn so you can grow your audience. This is really just straight cold outreach.
Yeah, Greg, I do have a question for you. So if I'm using some of these tools on LinkedIn and I'm reaching out to, let's say, 50 to 100 people each and every single day, how am I as an entrepreneur supposed to manage all these conversations? I mean, I can barely keep up with all the personal text messages that I get on a daily basis. Now you want me to engage in over 100 extra conversations per day? And are we going to be having like, I don't know, like are they going to be pinging me every second of the day to like, how am I supposed to keep up with this?
If they're pinging you every second of the day, you're doing something right. So honestly, this is where you build your business, right? This is where you build your book of business in terms of like how much revenue you have coming through the door. So in my mind, this is your primary job if you're the CEO and co-founder, is going out to find customers that can use your product. And again, LinkedIn is a fantastic channel. Honestly, it's a terrible messaging system. Like, it's one of the worst messaging systems I think that's out there in terms of like being able to sort through and figure out who do you need to talk to. So honestly, that is one of the harder aspects of using LinkedIn, is how do I stay on top of this? But again, if you have people messaging you after you send one of those messages, that's great. That means that they're interested. And so you can actually take that conversation off of LinkedIn. Like, you don't need to continue that conversation on LinkedIn. Say, hey, I would love to chat with you more. What's your email address? I'll send you some meeting time. Send them a Calendly link so that they can book a time to meet with you and use that to your advantage. Like, I would immediately, as fast as I possibly could, take that, you know, person off of LinkedIn and put them into your email. It's just going to be a lot easier to handle it in your email than it is in a LinkedIn messenger. But again, if you have the issue of everybody is trying to ping me at the same time after sending one single message, that is a great sign for you as an entrepreneur.
That's right, Greg. Yeah, I think this is an area where people should expect to be ignored quite a bit.
Yeah.
Or get a lot of responses that are just saying not interested. You know, Greg, you and I have done a lot of this outreach over the last few months. And yeah, the hit rates are not super high, right? I think a lot of people are inundated with a lot of messages. But if you can get in front of the right people that you're trying to sell to, at least you have a shot to engage and get a conversation going with them and have a formal meeting where you can pitch them more properly, right? I think a lot of this is a numbers game where you just want to reach out to as many people as possible. And, you know, you just go with whatever hit rate you can possibly get.
Yeah. And you want to make sure that when you're reaching out to people, you're not that person that's like, you know, right. Okay. So let me go to some of my LinkedIn messages. So I have one guy that's like, I'd like to add you to my professional network. Like, that means nothing to me. Like, that's an ignore. And I have another one that says, hi, Gregory. I help top startup professionals to find new leads and would like to connect with you. Thanks. It's like, yeah, it's going to be a no more than likely. Honestly, like, if you don't have a good message, an initial message to send, don't even send one. Just like, let your credentials, if you're a physician, reaching out to potential customers is honestly a lot easier for you because you have the MD behind your name that they're probably just going to connect with you just because you're a physician. So keep that in mind. Like, you don't need to, you know, berate people with terrible messaging. Like, I'm sure a lot of you guys get of, like, you know, people that want to control your finances are like, you know, love to connect doctor. And then it's like MD and you're like, no, that's not my last name. That's just my credentials. So keep that in mind. Like, you don't want to come across as that person. So either send personalized messages if you're really concerned, or don't even send a message at all. Just try to connect without a message. All right. So honestly, I run campaigns on two different platforms when I'm building a business. The first one, again, is LinkedIn, like we just talked about. It's a great one. You can target, LinkedIn is amazing because you can very, very specifically target different folks. So if you're selling this AI prior authorization tool, you can narrow down to the most specific people within hospital systems, like the chief information officer, chief medical information officer, or maybe there's like a person that actually handles prior authorizations. I'm not sure. Like president of prior authorization, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can find those people, and that is such a great advantage for you because you know that this solution is speaking to them. And if it doesn't speak to them, then maybe it's not the right solution. But honestly, like, that should narrow down your focus to a very, very small number of potential clients that you have to outreach to. And again, I would only focus on like one group of people and understand, like, are they interested in the product before moving on to the next. The other cool thing you can do with LinkedIn is a lot of just like we just talked about, kind of like the sourcing of people. So you can go through and, like, let's say, again, you're trying to sell to a large hospital system. So let's say New York Presbyterian you're trying to sell into. You can actually go to New York Presbyterian's LinkedIn Sales Navigator page, either look at all employees or look at decision makers. And you can start to actually just go through the list and be like, who might be the person that I need to reach out to? Or what is the title of the person at New York Presbyterian? And then use that in other hospital systems throughout the US to find basically the same person in each of those systems. So again, LinkedIn Sales Navigator, super important, super easy to use. There's a bunch of YouTube videos on there of like how to use it. Also, like, use the other tools that plug in. And again, Octopus is a Google Chrome extension that you can use with LinkedIn. All right. So now let's talk about cold outreach that is not on LinkedIn. So really, that's just going to mean email for me. I mean, maybe you can use social media. Like, if you're a, you know, big physician influencer, great. Use your channels to your advantage. But if you're not a big influencer, you can still do email campaigns. And email campaigns aren't going anywhere. You know, people still look at their email and you can still get leads from email. But I think it is a little bit more difficult, especially as a physician, where, like, on LinkedIn, people aren't going to ignore you because of you're a physician. In email, they might still ignore you. And honestly, your email might not go through. So let's talk about a couple of those issues that you might have. First, how do you source emails for potential clients? Again, this is going to be another tool that you can use. So I use something called Seamless AI, which is basically another Google Chrome extension that you can use either on a website. So, like, if you were to go to, let's just use New York Presbyterian again. If you go to New York Presbyterian's website with Seamless, there'll be a little button that's on your Google Chrome browser, and it'll actually show you contacts at New York Presbyterian, typically like up in the C-suite leadership type of stuff. And so you can find people that way, where you can then say, hey, find this contact. And what it'll do is actually send that into your CRM system within Seamless to then have that person's, you know, work email address. If they have their personal email address, they'll show it as well as like phone number and job title and links out to their LinkedIn and to their social media platforms. It's a really powerful tool. Typically, though, I use Seamless in addition to on LinkedIn Sales Navigator. So when you're making that list for Octopus, you should actually use that list for Seamless at the same time as well. So what it'll do is you will basically, at the top of your LinkedIn Sales Navigator search results, it'll say find all for Seamless. And what that'll do is actually go through the list of 25. So there's 25 people on each page on LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It'll go through all 25 of those people and try to find contact information for them and then put that into your CRM. So you can actually go and download that CRM. The other cool thing about Seamless, before we get Ronak involved, is they'll actually give you an AI score for how likely it is that this email address that they're showing to you is the correct email address, so that when you go and send an email, it doesn't just bounce back to you or gets thrown into spam or something like that. And so typically, like, if I'm going to be sending out an email campaign, I want to see a seamless AI score above like 70%. If it's lower than that, it's not really worth my time to send potentially a message that's going nowhere and just going to get blocked and resent to me.
Yeah, Greg. So as we're talking about reaching out to a whole bunch of different folks, whether it's through email or through LinkedIn, I would just add a little bit of two cents that depending on the type of business that you're trying to create, you might want to think about a little bit of customization of what the messaging is all about or not. If you're just trying to go brute force, get in front of as many people as you can, then just going with the same, roughly the same message across all people should be okay. But if you are looking at very targeted sales, right? If your business is focused on making fewer sales, but higher value sales, I would say you probably want more customization as opposed to less. But if you want more volume, just as many people going to your website as possible, let's say, then you should really focus on that efficiency and just getting in front of as many people as possible. The other thing that I would say is maybe like think about experimenting with different subject lines or different messages. There might be certain things or certain topics that you bring up about your company that resonate a little bit more so than what you originally thought. So doing a little bit of an A/B testing where you're sending out, let's say, 5 different versions of the same email, but you're hitting on different features of of your company, let's say, right? There could be one that is going to get a lot more traction, a lot more hits that actually leads to clicks and follow-ups than the other 4 messages. So I think it's worthwhile just doing a little bit of that A/B testing to do that experimentation.
Completely agree. And that leads me to my next and I think last tool that we'll talk about on this one. So let's say that you do have this really nice list that is very clean. You have really good AI sending scores. It's like, how do you actually send those emails? You know, let's say that you have a new company and you have the new Gmail company email address. I can't remember what it's called. How do you actually send emails? You can go and do something like a HubSpot or a MailChimp or one of these other platforms. However, if you don't want to do that and you'd rather just say, hey, I want to use my Gmail, you can do that. So there's a company called Yesware, which, again, I'm going to put all these companies into the show notes so you guys can see these. But Yesware is a great email kind of sender campaign company. So what it does is actually attaches to your Gmail account. And on Gmail with like a company page or a company URL attached to it, I think you can send up to 2,000 emails a day. That's your limit. And with Yesware, you can actually create these campaigns that will run specifically through your Gmail instead of going to like a MailChimp and having to do that, which means it's going to look like an email rather than, you know, like a really nice newsletter type of email that you would get from like Substack or MailChimp or something else. It can just literally be text, which ends up working pretty well depending on who you're sending it to. So with Yesware, what you would do is basically create a campaign. You would say, this is the email body that I want to send. And like Ronak's saying, you can actually do some kind of A/B testing. So maybe you create 2 campaigns, same body, different subject lines. And then what you would do is take that list that you created off of Seamless, and you would store that, or you'd put that CSV file into Yesware. And then what it would do is basically send out emails throughout. It usually takes like an hour or two to actually send. Let's say you're sending like 900 emails. It'll take a little bit of time to do that. So maybe you want to start them at like 6 a.m. and have them send from 6 to 8. But it's nice because then you're going to get all of the responses into your Gmail. And you can actually create these like multi-touch campaigns, meaning like you send one email on a Monday. They don't respond. You want to follow up on Friday. If they don't respond again, then maybe you follow up the next Friday, and then maybe that's it. You don't want to necessarily spam people too much, but if you do have a product that is going to make a difference to people, there's really no other way in terms of like getting it out into the hands of people other than cold outreach, unless you're going to spend a crap ton of money on marketing. But I wouldn't recommend that. I would recommend doing this brute force approach, at least for a little bit, until you get the product out into people's hands. And then maybe you get some nice, like, you know, reviews and customer testimonials, and then you can start to figure out social. But I wouldn't rely on like just marketing the crap out of something until you actually, as the founder, can go out and sell it, you know, over a Zoom call and get somebody to pay for it that came from cold outreach. You know, one of the things that YC and Paul Graham always says is like, do the things that don't scale. And this is something that, you know, doesn't necessarily scale, right? Cold outreach is cold outreach for a reason. It's because you don't know anybody in the industry, but that's how most companies start. And if you're getting good traction from cold outreach, you're probably going to get pretty good traction when you start to actually traditionally market it. So yeah, those are the tools that I would use. Again, Octopus AI for automating your connections on LinkedIn and your messaging on LinkedIn, and then Seamless AI to pull contacts for specific people. And then you can plug those emails into Yesware and do email campaigns. Those are honestly kind of the three different tools that I use anytime that I'm thinking of starting a business, because it, again, is just so efficient. It saves you so much time. Yeah. Ronak?
Yeah, Greg, I think this is such a valuable episode. And thank you so much for just like sharing with the audience a little bit of your knowledge on these tools. I think this is game changing, right? It's like, as a startup, you don't have infinite money that you can work with. And these are very inexpensive tools where you can still get your company and your message in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. And that's a very valuable thing, right? If you can't even get somebody a little bit excited by your company while reaching out to them on LinkedIn, email campaigns, whatever it is, you know, I really wonder how much more advertising is really going to do for you. I feel like advertising is an accelerant that if something is already working, you can really push it forward very quickly, get in front of a lot of people. But if you're not even able to get this portion correct, then the advertising might be a wasted effort. So I think this is a really good way to, you know, just push the company forward, go from that 0 to 1 in terms of sales and your initial customers. Like Greg was saying at the beginning, this is really that brute force, the grind it out. You know, everybody always says that doing a startup is very difficult. I think this is one of the most difficult portions of a startup, just doing those initial sales. It's hard. It's a lot of rejection. You feel like you're spamming people's inbox a little bit. But I mean, this is what you got to do to grow the business. So if you're going to have trouble with this, you might want to think about who are your co-founders. Is there somebody that is a little bit less shy that can go out and just send all these messages and just, you know, are able to take the bull by the horns a little bit. But from a practicality standpoint, this might be one of the most practical messages that we can really send out to those that are just starting trying to build a company, that those initial sales are really important. And the tools that Greg just mentioned are very valuable. So totally recommend trying them out. Again, they're a couple hundred dollars in total per month. It's not that much money, but it could really be the difference between getting your first, let's say, 10 big time clients versus not. So take the time to do sales correctly. It is an extremely important part of the startup.
And the other thing I'll say is, I was talking to a couple founders about this. I don't know if they're listening to this podcast or not, but they were talking about like hiring people as like a VP of sales or bringing in salespeople. I wouldn't do that until you feel very, very comfortable as the founder selling your own product. Like, I honestly wouldn't do that for a while. Like, if you're not the person taking the sales calls and understanding what people are saying, like what customers are saying about your product, you should not be considering bringing on anybody to take that function away from you. Like, the founder needs to lead the sales effort for quite a while until you're saying, okay, I'm ready to scale this. I have a playbook down of exactly what we need to do. I just need more bodies to go out and actually do it. Because also as the founder, you're likely going to sell this product a lot better than most people, because you understand exactly what the customer is looking for. You understand exactly what the product does. And you are usually a little bit more passionate about the subject, if I'm being honest. So I remember when we at Flip we brought some like contractors on to try to help us sell, it did not work well because they had so many questions that they couldn't answer in meetings. And it was like, you know, I would have rather just had that meeting myself. Like, you can outsource some of like the cold messaging stuff, but take all of those meetings. If you're the founder, be in those sales calls, understand what the objections are and figure out how to work around those objections. You know, when I'm also like angel investing, I want to know that it's going to be a founder-led sales process for at least a while.
So actually, Greg, on that, let me just say one last thing and feel free to chime in. All the tools that you mentioned today, these are absolutely great for sales, for getting your initial clients and customers. But if you are looking to raise money, these tools can also be effective in terms of raising capital, right? If you're not ready to go out to that brand name venture capital firm where, you know, like we talked about in a previous episode, that you're ready to do all the research on who's the right partner to reach out to and how to do that. If you're just at the very early stages and you're looking to raise angel capital, these tools are a nice way to start reaching out to a few hundred angel investors on LinkedIn. You can send them your PowerPoint slide or your Canva deck. You can give them a few bullet points of like what you're doing for your business. And if there's traction, also send them a Calendly link where they can set up a quick like 15, 30 minute Zoom call with you, right? This is a nice way to get in front of a lot of accredited investors, a lot of angel investors in a very efficient manner.
Totally agree. And actually one of the features that I didn't talk about for Yesware is you can actually see when people open and interact with your email. That is a very nice tool, especially when you send an email to a very specific person that you really, really want to get in front of. You can actually see, oh, that person opened the email 25 times. They must be interested, or they forwarded it along to somebody else or a chain of people that are all opening it too. And then it's like, okay, maybe I'll follow up with that person in a week because I know that they've opened this literally like 20 times. So it does give you that information too on Yesware, which is a really nice and valuable piece of information to have when you're, you know, stalking certain people to, you know, potentially sell them something or to get an investment from them. All right. I think we'll stop it there. That was like a 30-minute episode kind of on cold outreach. Hopefully that's helpful for physician founders that are out there that are either thinking about starting a company or already have started a company. Those are all tools that I've used. I think they're pretty good. And yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to either Greg or Ronak at physicians.vc. The last plug I'll put in there is we are growing the newsletter. So it's called the Physician Job Board, as I've changed it last week. It's literally a newsletter that's hosted right now on Substack for physicians that are looking for potentially a non-clinical full-time role. So anything within startups, venture capital, consulting firms, medical device, pharma, it's all going to be in there. It's a bi-weekly newsletter. Actually, we've gotten it up to several hundred physicians that are reading it now, which is great. So if you haven't, feel free to subscribe. I'll have it in the show notes for you to go straight to the Substack. All right. We'll see you next time on the Physician Syndicate podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.